you lead in. You lead in.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Agency. Eugene Napvick here in Toronto.
And Candy Minx here in Chicago.
Hey, Candy.
Hi. Did you see how I tried to count us in? 3, 2, 1. I was like, crash. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Pretty well.
Good.
I've got my staples out of my knee.
Ooh, good. I mean, I'm mixed feelings. That's good. I'm glad they're out. But
yeah, it turns out that there's a device. There's a human staple removing device. Who knew about this?
I think I have one in my desk.
Well, it's hilarious because Vox told me that that such a thing exists, and he owns one too. What is this? Everybody has human staple.
No, I don't have a human staple. I have a normal staple remover that you take out of paper. I was joking.
It's not that different.
Oh, interesting. I bet it's not. Did they squeeze it over your staples?
They just kind of like, I think they just sort of hook it in and they squeeze the thing and it comes out.
Sounds like the one in my desk.
And,
okay.
And they, you know, the nice person who did it said, oh, this is going to sting. And as I get further up your leg, it'll sting more. Ugh. So, great. Thanks for that.
Thanks for the warning. Okay. Well, that's good.
So anyway, those are out, and the incision's healing up really well in my knee. And now I have 6 weeks of passive motion exercises to do. And I have to wear the splint while I walk. And then after that, I can ditch the splint. And once I can do leg raises, then I'll be able to ditch the crutch and be, you know, work on strengthening and be walking on my own.
Fantastic. That's great. Good stuff. Good stuff. So we have a couple of guests today. Plus, we're going to talk about, you promised us some recipes.
I did. I promised, you know, I gave a chicken recipe in the Comfort Food Diner last week. And I promised that I would provide a recipe for a vegetarian recipe.
Great.
So if you like, I'll get right into that.
Yeah, let's do that. And then we'll introduce, we've got a couple of guests, two special segments. And then, you know, we'll move to that in a little bit. That's fantastic.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about another recipe I learned at the Hanoi Cooking Center in Hanoi, Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I took two classes there, one on Hanoian and Northern Vietnamese home cooking, and the other one on Vietnamese vegetarian cooking. Have you ever had bitter gourd or bitter melon?
I don't think so.
I don't know how generally popular it is. I think most Chinese restaurants will have a bitter gourd or bitter melon, same thing, dish. I had it once or twice a few years ago, but I really didn't know what to expect. But I really like this dish. It's unusual. If you just hate bitter, you're not going to like it.
I like bitter.
Me too. It's quite a lovely, tasty dish.
Yeah.
So first thing you need is a bitter gourd or a bitter melon. Some places call them bitter gourds, some places call them bitter melons. They're the same thing. They look kind of like a bumpy zucchini.
Okay.
So you get one of these and you slice it into sections that are about, oh, let's say 3 centimeters long. So you have 3 centimeter long rounds. And then you use a teaspoon and you hollow out the middle. You take out the seeds, leaving a hollow inside of your gourd. Okay.
Okay.
Then you get some dried wood ear mushrooms, which you can get at your Asian market. If you don't have them, you can use dried shiitake. You can use any kind of mushrooms you like, actually. In Hanoi, you would have this with dried wood ear mushrooms. That's the most common mushroom you see there. And you'll see a lot of dishes actually that have wood ear mushroom and pork as a combination.
Okay.
Or as a filling and dumplings and that kind of thing. So if you have your dried mushrooms, you need to reconstitute them by soaking them in water for about half an hour. And then you drain out the water, you squeeze out the water, and you slice the mushrooms into thin little strips. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you toss the mushrooms into a bowl along with some firm tofu, a good pinch of salt, a good pinch of pepper, and maybe a teaspoon of sugar into a bowl, and you mush it all up together.
Okay.
Okay, until you have a mushed up mixture of mushrooms, tofu, and your simple herbs. Mm-hmm. And then you stuff the holes in your gourd rounds with this mixture so that it's mounded up a little bit on the top.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah. Just kind of like a, you know, well, like anything you would stuff. Mm-hmm. And you then steam these pieces of gourd that are stuffed with the tofu. I use a bamboo steamer in a wok, but you can use any kind of steaming setup you have. No big deal, any way you want to do it, as long as you can steam. And if you don't have a steamer, you can use an upside down saucer in a pot with a little bit of water. You can steam on that. And it's pretty easy to steam on anything. You put these stuffed gourd pieces in your steamer, and you steam for about 15 minutes. You want the gourd to be tender when you pierce it with a skewer.
Okay.
Okay. Nice and simple.
Yeah.
Then you need a dipping sauce. And for dipping sauce, you can use hoisin. You can use maybe a combination of hoisin and sriracha, or you can use light soy sauce. Or if you're not so vegetarian that you can tolerate Vietnamese fish sauce, that's another option. And if you like Vietnamese fish sauce, I'll give you the formula for your basic Ngoc Cham, which is your standard right. Vietnamese dipping sauce all across Vietnam. This is the ubiquitous dipping sauce with almost everything. It varies a little bit depending on where you go, but it's pretty consistent. First thing you need is Vietnamese fish sauce. And if you're in Hanoi, you buy it by grade. There's numbers on it, and it's number 40 is the grade that you want. I've never seen it graded here, so I just look for the best Vietnamese fish sauce I can find in my Asian market, as opposed to Thai fish sauce. You want your fish sauce to be made out of either anchovies or mackerel. And of course, if you're strictly vegetarian, you're not going to have this dipping sauce. I'm just giving you this as an add-on.
I wonder what the substitute would be or alternative, because you want that umami, isn't that right?
Yeah, really the substitute is soy sauce or hoisin sauce.
Okay, yeah, and mushrooms have umami, yeah, okay.
So yeah, the deal with fish sauce is fish sauce is a natural glutamate, so it enhances umami flavor in things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And so basically that means it just makes everything better. And I use fish sauce at home, in not just in Vietnamese food. I add it to almost everything because it makes almost everything better.
Yeah.
And in Vietnam, they don't make their fish sauce so strong that it smells really strong and fishy.
Right.
They make it fairly mild. And so the formula is this. You get about a quarter cup of Vietnamese fish sauce, about juice of a good lime. So it could be around the same amount of fish sauce and lime, maybe a little bit less lime juice. Mm-hmm. A little splash of white vinegar, 2 tablespoons of sugar, a chopped up clove of garlic, and a chopped up chili. Hot chili pepper can be any kind you want. In Hanoi, they said that we should always use the cayenne chilies, the long chilies, the long red ones.
Okay.
And when I asked what they used, the chef admitted that they actually use the small Thai chilies, which are much hotter, and referred to the cayenne chilies as the tourist chilies.
Right.
So whatever you like.
Right. Okay.
Here in a Vietnamese restaurant, I would say they usually use the long chilies chopped up. So you have garlic, chili, sugar, vinegar, lime juice, fish sauce. You stir it up until all the sugar has been dissolved. And that's your standard Ngoc Cham Vietnamese fish sauce for just about anything. And it's either that or hoisin is quite nice with the bitter gourds as well, because the hoisin has a little bit of sweetness to it. And so the sweet and the bitter are really nice off one another. So I would say if you haven't tried bitter melon before or bitter gourd, give this a try. It's really dead simple to make.
Sounds so accessible.
Yeah, very accessible, very easy. All you need is a way to steam these things. And if you don't have a steamer, I'll bet you could bake them in the oven for 15 minutes as well, and they would be fine. In fact, I'm fairly sure of it. But steaming is the way I was taught. And super delicious, very simple, nice, clean dish. Lovely as a side dish served with almost anything.
Love it.
So that's
Thank
it.
You. That's fantastic.
Our vegetable dish in the comfort food diner for today.
Yeah. I've been on a minimum of cooking in the last few days. I've been eating pickles and cheese, and we did make pizza, and that was pretty good. And I feel like all I'm doing is dishes half the time because we're cooking so much more.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. We did an errand, and we were in the south side, and I had an urge. We drove by this place I love, and they were open doing takeout, so we got chocolate malts.
Wow.
I was almost crying. I was so happy in the car driving home. Now, I hope I don't get sick from that, but it seemed almost worth it because it was amazing. And the kids working in there were working so hard. They seemed to really have their act together. And I love the restaurant. It's called Top Notch. It's in Beverly in Chicago, and it's an old-fashioned diner, and they have amazing burgers and patty melts. I don't think we have patty melts in Canada. But they are really good. They're like a burger on toast with fried onions and cheese.
Mm.
And they're really, really good, like on rye bread.
Okay, it's like a burger on rye
bread. Oh, it's so good. Anyway, we did have a treat. And I was like, because we've only been eating, you know, our food, it was great to have somebody else's.
Absolutely. I've been cooking a lot as well. And I was thinking of going on strike tonight and and maybe seeing about pizza.
Pizza has become, well, you know, Stag would have it as a staple anyway. He loves his pizza. And so we did get dough from, I had made a pizza a while ago and I was not impressed with my dough.
Really?
And so I didn't like it. It was too yeasty for me. I don't know what, it just wasn't, it was too bready, yeasty. I just didn't like it. Stag loved it. But the good news is he'll almost eat anything I cook. But I got the dough from Trader Joe's and it was pretty good. It was pretty good. It was very good. I preferred it over my own. But I'm going to make dough again. I got some sourdough yeast, I think, or something like that. So I might try that.
Oh, really?
Yep. But, you know, I like my little snacks, my cheese and crackers.
We've been doing some baking. And everyone's baking these days. And I'm no exception. I've made a few breads and also some cornbread. Cornbread's nice and easy and always delicious.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And a friend of mine dropped off a cornbread. I gave him my cornbread recipe, and I told him that he could start the recipe. It's made in a cast iron skillet. He could start the recipe by cooking some bacon till it's crisp.
Wow.
And leaving the bacon in the cast iron skillet and then putting the batter right into the hot bacon fat and cooking it in the oven in the cast iron skillet. And then he could also mix in the bacon into the cornbread, which he did, but he used about four times more bacon than I would normally use. Oh. It was the most heavenly bacony cornbread you could ever imagine. And while I was eating it, I thought, there's too much bacon in this cornbread. Good though.
Good, yeah. Bacon has become the go-to food around here. I would say that the bacon has been really.
Well, it is a serious comfort food.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And, you know, when I was growing up, my favorite comfort food that my mom used to make was meatloaf. And it wasn't until much later that I realized the reason I really, really liked it is before she baked the meatloaf, she would layer strips of bacon on the top of the meatloaf.
Wow.
Then she would baste on Heinz chili sauce.
Wow, sounds good.
All things. The only thing I've ever seen anyone use Heinz chili sauce for. I assume they made it so my mom could make this. She would baste it, and then she would take it out in mid-cooking and baste it more. And she would cook that meatloaf until the bacon on top just started to get a little bit crispy and caramelized. Mm. And so it's like meatloaf with bacon candy coating on it.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's seriously amazing.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds good. Now, listen, we got some exciting stuff today.
We do.
We do. We have two different interviews with some very interesting people. The first two, we've spoken to two people, Dennis Dion and Allie Rice, and they are in the helping field.
That's right.
I learned that today because Allie said something like the helping field. And I went, I'm writing that down. That's very informative. And we also interviewed a punk rock lead singer of the band Citizen and clothing designer.
So isn't that the best band name?
It is the best band name. And she has a dollar sign in the S, and it's so brilliant. And they are very fun live, and they're quite good. And we even have permission to play two of their songs. So basically awesome. Today we're going to do, we'll talk to Allie and Dennis. Then I'm going to go right into one of her songs, Citizen songs, our little interview. And then we'll close with one of her songs.
And she's also, Claudia is also a clothing designer. She's right. Not just a punk rocker.
No, she's not just a punk rocker. She's also a wonderful clothing designer. And we have bought a couple of her masks today. I've promoted them on our Instagram. I'll promote them on our Facebook page. And I'm pretty sure that with shipping and handling, you'll be able to get those anywhere you live.
Excellent.
Yeah, at least in North America. Let's just say that. I don't want to start saying we'll send them other places. And, you know, it's a funny coincidence. I was thinking about Vietnam just now, and my sister went to Vietnam years and years ago, and Allie went to Vietnam. So that's actually something we could have talked about too. But Allie is also someone who I think of, who do I know? What do I know about Vietnam? I know those two who I'm very close to. Allie is a friend of mine, and she's an avid traveler to Vietnam. So there you go.
Well, it's a, you know, it's a compelling place.
Yeah.
I was just there, you know, a few months ago, and it's the kind of place I would be very comfortable going back to over and over again.
Right, right, yeah.
I don't know why it is that certain places just feel right to you, but Vietnam and Hanoi in particular, I just love the vibe in that city.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool. That's like me in New Orleans, I guess, or New Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, some places just feel good. And my other secret places I don't want to say in British Columbia. I don't want anyone else to go there.
All right. Well, it's secret, so you can't say.
That's right. Okay, so let's get to that, shall we?
All right. Two interviews coming up. Yes.
And also, I'm just going to squeeze this last minute thing, and I'm so sorry. It's going to be a two-part interview with Allie and Dennis. We're going to revisit them in the future. So thank you. Thank you, Eugene.
Excellent.
All right.
See you next week.
See you all next right. week.
That's done, I believe.
Yeah, it says recording in my top left.
All right.
Great.
All right, success.
Oh, yes.
All right.
So high five.
People making this happen.
Oh, no, thank you. I don't know how we would have done that. I guess let's officially do a countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is Candy Minks in Chicago for the agency.
And Eugene Napick in Toronto.
Hi, Eugene. We've got a couple of guests here. Do we want to introduce them? Can you see their names?
I can. Why don't you introduce our guests, Candy?
Okay, it's Denise Dion and Allie Rice. And they are therapists. And I'm sure they're going to actually qualify what their job description is. But they're friends of mine in Vancouver who also work in Vancouver in all kinds of capacities. And I think we should get Allie to maybe give her self-description.
Yeah, thanks. Candy and Eugene for inviting us to talk. Not a lot of people want us to share what we know. No, just kidding.
Are you serious?
We try and make people listen.
Okay.
No, just kidding. So yeah, it's in a nutshell, hard to synthesize what we do because I think when Dennis and I first met, it was we were working in with a particular population. Mm-hmm. Doing supportive therapeutic work with families wherein the young person was struggling with substance misuse. Okay. In a residential setting with all genders and all the family members. And then that was about 2005, 2006 when we met and started working together. And then since then, it's our careers have had a fairly gradual evolution where we're working still alongside people who struggle with addictions, but it's become more broad and open. And so our technical or our official title is family therapist. Mm-hmm. But we're working with a whole host of people and a whole host of different problems. Dennis, do you want to add to that?
No, just thanks so much for inviting us as well. Yeah, I guess I would describe it as a registered clinical counselor. So supporting people in making change and whatever kind of change that they're looking for.
Excellent. Yeah. I think for our listeners right away, we might be wondering, why would I want to talk to Allie and Dennis, and what would that have to do with an arts and culture podcast? I think off the top of my head, I would throw in, it's not that top of my head because I actually wrote a list. Full disclosure.
Off the top of your list.
Off the top of my list.
Item one.
I love it.
Item one. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, celebrities, there's celebrities who have been very vocal about having mental health issues or family issues in crisis. And I will throw out quickly Kendrick Lamar, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Ariana Grande, Janet Jackson, Brooke Shields, David Duchovny, Kanye West, Pete Davidson, Chris Evans, Lisa Nicole Carson, and Leonardo DiCaprio. That's just the kind of right away, there's an avenue that it's affecting all of us, and they have helped destigmatize personal issues, relationship issues, and mental health issues. So that's one reason why I think it's interesting. And never mind the fact that we have this quarantine, which I think has affected, in my intuition, it's affected people. And I thought asking you two about it would bring out some answers.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's great. And it's wonderful that I did a little bit of research before getting on here, because I thought, well, it's such a broad ask. Mm-hmm. You're really asking an open-ended question. And so we could go in a whole bunch of different directions, but I sifted through a lot of the COVID-19 mental health toolkits that I've been circulating around within the helping field anyways. And you know, you get a couple, as a therapist, you get a couple a day in your inbox. And so sifting through the ones that I've found useful and that I've actually forwarded on to my clients. And I thought, bingo, this is perfect because of the type of podcast that you and Eugene do. The one that I'd actually been forwarding on to families is the Recreational Therapists from Vancouver Coastal Health. They have sent out a really thorough and beautiful toolkit, mental health toolkit on leisure as recovery. So I thought that was kind of a parallel process and interesting in with respect to what you guys normally talk about.
Interesting. So healing and recovery through leisure.
And leisure or leisure, tomato, tomato, I don't know. Denise, Dennis, the broader picture of like what arts and culture can do for you in a time of crisis. So they've talked about quality over quantity and finding something that that really suits you. And then they've got this like enormous list of different links to different online ways to connect.
Cool.
One of the things I've noticed around here is that everybody I know has taken to baking.
Yeah.
You can't even buy flour in our local stores.
No yeast.
Or yeast, exactly. Everyone's baking up a storm and discovering their inner baker and learning life skills that they forgot about years ago.
Yeah. Here it's gardening and baking. Yeah. A return to the domestic.
Right. Now, obviously you can't tell us everything, but have you found a change in your clientele and their needs since this has happened?
Yeah, great question.
Yeah, it is a really good question. I guess just to start us off, I guess what I've noticed is that, because the world feels like it's kind of upside down and strange, that normally all of the things that people do that sort of help provide meaning or help them sort of cope or feel good in their life, their connections or their activities are just inaccessible right now. And so I've noticed that people tend to be just having a harder time or just feeling more tender or like just more isolated. And so they're struggling a bit more. And so whatever their struggle it's kind of a bit amplified. So if their struggle is with anxiety, there's a bit more of that around, or with depression, there's just a bit more of those symptoms around. And so I like that you're talking about, like, all these creative solutions that people are trying to do to kind of be okay enough in the face of kind of what we're facing collectively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my practice, what I've noticed for folks who struggle with depression, in maybe what would be more of an existential angst, or like a what's the meaning, but still coping enough to be working and quote unquote managing in the world. For those people, it's somewhat strangely, but it seems to be a fairly common experience for my clients. They actually are doing really, really well. There's a thriving experience there because somehow there's isolation is legitimized, mm-hmm. and they can connect on their terms, the way that they would prefer to connect. Mm-hmm. And there's just an okay, everyone else is in the same boat, and there's no scrutiny or no judgment, and the shame is gone around staying inside. And that part is, you know, within week two of this crisis, I don't know, five or six of my people were like, no, I'm doing great. I was like, no problem.
That's true too.
That's awesome.
Are you finding that people are missing the simple physical contact, a hug, a kiss, that kind of thing? Instead, we're like on Hollywood squares. We talk to each other on Zoom. We don't shake hands. We don't touch each other anymore.
Well, again, like, to go back to the certain folks with depression and certain particular, like, Dennis and I work with a lot of problem gamblers.
Oh.
And the casinos are closed, so again, there is a silver lining to this struggle, and so people are actually doing way better than they were a couple of months ago, and yet what you bring up, Eugene, is super pertinent, because, okay, so they're doing better and feeling okay to be alone and at home or connected with their families. But yeah, there's that human contact, that connection that comes from touch that is missing.
Yeah, it's people that, for better or for worse, with their stuck with their family, at least they're getting some contact. I know some clients who, say, are elderly, or they're single, they're reporting that they're just craving human contact again.
Mm-hmm.
How do you meet with your clients now? Do you do it virtually like this?
Yes.
Yeah. Virtually through platforms or through the telephone too.
It's another option. Is that working okay for you?
Yeah, it's kind of, we're kind of forced collectively to be creative and how to maintain our connections and our support. So it's an interesting venue that maybe opens up some possibilities as well. There's this a client I work with who's a Mandarin speaker, and she was sharing with me that the Chinese character for crisis is danger plus opportunity. And I can see that there's like these opportunities to be creative and sort of new territories to explore with connections that Zoom provides, but also like there's struggles. So there's lots of things going on.
I think, you know, like for me, I'm one of those people who's thriving in this situation personally. I don't like all the suffering I see in the world of people losing their family, obviously, but the part about traffic calming and being at home and not really having to engage with other people is something that, it's kind of my set point anyway. I mean, I'm a very social person, but I'm actually a social person who does get anxiety and does feel exhausted after socializing. Some people, whereas my husband, he feels invigorated after he socializes. Like, I always joke, I left it on the dance floor, you know? I gotta get home. And I think that some people, I can see some people, you know, obviously that's attached to a mental health or a social anxiety thing. And so I could see this being a benefit to them. I don't miss touching per se or handshaking. I actually was always a very nervous handshaker anyway. I don't like it. I hate that weak hand that comes back at you or they squeeze too hard. So that part I can live without.
Clammy or,
Yeah, but what about the idea of, are people, there's a, you know, the idea that maybe we're doing too much entertainment, too much binging.
Well, that was in this recreational leisure for recovery kit. That was one of their main points, is it's quality over quantity. So, the getting on social media or jumping on the Netflix bandwagon of what show next to watch. That isn't necessarily bad in and of itself, but that it requires a lot of time and energy and commitment. Mm-hmm. Whereas this particular guide offers guitar lessons through this one link, or if you're not interested in music, maybe in dancing and drama, or in particular book lists, or being in a book club through this particular link. And so it just offers a more wide variety.
Right.
Even when you were talking, Eugene, and we were joking, but not joking, but like noticing about flour and yeast being off the shelves and everybody's on board with this, there were a lot of commentary about like, what if I don't like gardening or cooking, you know? And yeah. Now there's pressure to show my sourdough starter, or jump, like, my niece wants me to have the sourdough starter. I don't want it. Now I have to make bread as well as teach my kids, as well as, you know, and so there's just, you know, I think the filter that we all see the world through is what I like to have conversations about. We can get drawn into a common whirlwind of what's important or what's not important, or what's the new thing, what's the latest in the news. You know, we can get really caught up in that, but I think slowing down and really asking each person on an individual, unique basis, what's your preference around what you'd like to do with this time, given that these are the facts.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, it's funny, in social justice, it's actually considered we've had dialogue about it being insensitive to post pictures of food, period, on social media, because of people who don't live at home and aren't, this was, you know, long before the quarantine, but but it's insensitive to people who don't cook or can't cook or live outside to have all these abundant restaurant photos and food photos. So I've always tried to keep that to a minimum. I definitely break down and show some cake every now and then, but it did make me try to not post pictures of food. You know,
well, even that we can offer our services through the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that we work with who struggle with certain addictions, they don't often have access to the internet or a device that would be able to connect with us or communicate with us. Sometimes they don't even have phones, telephones.
Right. Right. Well, that's where there was a huge movement to get devices to kids, to families right now. Was that they were sending out iPads to families that might not have devices for their kids. Mm-hmm. So they do schooling, you know, it's.
I found that on social media, and there's a lot of social media happening with so many people being around at home. I'm okay with the food pics, the cat pics, all of that sort of stuff, because those are the sorts of things that sort of say, hey, here's a little tiny thing about us that I can share with my friends. And it provides some connection. What I'm finding is really overwhelming is the COVID-19 news, the COVID-19 fake news, the COVID-19 conspiracy theory news. It's just, you know, in the last few days on my social media feeds, debate about banning guns has been all over the place. It's like, I just find I'm just ignoring all of that on social media at this point. It's just overwhelming. I'd rather have the cat pictures or the bread pictures.
Well, it's funny because I thought that at first Facebook was so cute with all the cat pictures and animal pictures. Then it went to the dark side for a long time. And I thought in the first few weeks of the quarantine, I thought it had a return to cat pictures and cheerfulness again. Obviously, people were sharing articles about how to cope and the, you know, things about pandemic and viruses. But there were a lot more effort, I thought, of people kind of wild abandon to humor. But it's gotten definitely, and I'm a contributor too. I go for those heavy, heavy dark subjects as, you know, as much as anybody. And yeah, that's trying. You wonder how much self-damage you're doing or negative energy you're giving to yourself. And, you know, it is, I love seeing pictures of people's food and such. It's not a judgment thing. It's more in the social justice world. Like, you know, I definitely do have friends that are homeless and acquaintances that are homeless. And so in that way, I do try to be a little sensitive about that, but not in a judgy way. On the other hand, you know, people like good cooking.
Yeah.
What's that saying from Doonesbury? Even revolutionaries like chocolate chip cookies.
True that, huh?
Yeah.
Do you find that with people being stuck at home, do you think that's a contributor to greater degree of substance abuse, drinking, that kind of thing?
Depends on the substance and the availability. I know that, like, again, even like the casinos being closed, that's a good example. They can't access their escape hatch. And then with alcohol, it's how are you affording it? But it is available. Whereas other substances, it's tripling in price, and so it becomes less accessible for many.
And what about what would it be called? Processing addiction or sex addiction? I mean, you know, we know people that are definitely hooking up on Tinder. We don't know them, you know, through work and different younger people that we know, not Stag and I, because I'm like, Stag, why do you know these stats? But, you know, people are hooking up. They are hooking up, you know?
Oh, yeah, people are, quote, I'm doing the quote, distance dating. That is happening.
Yeah.
Wow. Who knew?
But the process addiction piece is really interesting. Like, that's the gambling, the food, the sex, the porn,
Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Netflix, social media.
Check.
Yeah.
Now guess which ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Multiple choice. I don't know. What would you say, Dennis? My practice is just more anecdotal, but the people who are struggling with, say, an eating disorder, that when that problem is present, it's bigger than the epidemic. Like, there isn't, like, that becomes a backdrop. The time and place just isn't as important as the problem just taking over. Mm-hmm. And the same is true for many addictions when they're in that active place. Mm-hmm. We can see it as interesting to comment on, is it impacting them because they're at home or not? I would say that when you're captured by that particular problem, that your house could be burning and it wouldn't be, you wouldn't pay attention so much to that.
Yeah, I think that's true. The context can kind of amplify things mitigate things to some degree, but if someone's really struggling, they're going to be really struggling. I know that in this jurisdiction in British Columbia, that there's, you know, they've noted that alcohol use has gone up. Mm-hmm. But in terms of it being problematic, or, you know, it just, I guess it depends on what's happening for the person. You know, it's not necessarily that there's anything wrong with increase in volume. It's like the impact that is having on the person or their family members. Yeah. And also, I know that there's been reports of increase in domestic violence too. That there's that's just based on the stressors on families, that there's more women experiencing violence.
And then what they've done with that is the battered women's support services, and I don't know whether WEVA did it, but BWSS did it, where they're now able to access or to support people through text and through other means. Like,
originally the confidentiality clauses always ruled over supporting people just based on fear of litigation, et cetera, et cetera. But right when COVID 19 became a problem up here, which was later than where it became, when it became a problem for you guys down in Chicago, and I think Toronto too. Anyways, what right away the provincial healthcare said, we're going to give a lot looser restrictions around how you support people. So even FaceTime was allowed, texting support was allowed. So that's a silver lining for people who experience violence in the home and not having to support, where you don't have to just go into the place or call the services. Now you can text, which is wonderful.
I guess necessity is the mother of invention, huh?
Absolutely.
I recently injured my knee and I discovered there's such a thing as virtual physiotherapy.
Interesting.
Who knew?
Yeah, wild.
You know, also, I've encountered a couple of times on some Zoom parties, speaking about everyone's difference, is a couple of people who, they are suffering, they're very angry about being inside and they're freaking out. They feel claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. It seems beyond a lack of, like, they can't get their hair cut. And I you know, I thought it was really kind of good that they were so honest about it. But they're really having a hard time with their own being, and that they are their own, and they live alone. It was usually people living alone, and they were trying their best to get out and go for walks and such, but they're really having some difficult times of feeling claustrophobic and that their life has ended. How they were so used to living in a very consuming, outgoing, it doesn't have to be negative, but they were used to some of their pastimes being shopping and things. And have you had any encounter of that, or words of wisdom for that kind of energy?
For people that are, you know, I think that they're not alone with that experience. There is a lot of uncertainty with it. And so I think that there's just something happening collectively, and it's really hard to know how things are going to shape out. What I notice about some problems is that they kind of like capture people's imagination, and they kind of predict certain things about the future, and so it's like sort of inserting the problem into someone's future and predicting suffering, predicting future being terrible. And I guess I would encourage them to do their best with focusing on what they have control over in the here and now, and eating well and sleeping well, and doing their best to stay connected to folks. But they're for sure not alone in that struggle. And there are bigger questions that we have to figure out collectively about what to do next, you know, how to support people and getting back to work and getting their life back. Like, that's a bigger question that we all have to work through together.
Yeah. I know, Dennis, when you and I are facilitating groups and people are experiencing kind of a real close relationship to rage as a response to certain problems.
Yes.
You have a great way of talking about what that rage is saying. So is your anger positioning you in a good way to take a look at what values are being transgressed? Mm-hmm. So is it about freedom? Is it about a lack of connection? Is it about, like, really just disregarding the value or evaluation of what that emotion is, and then asking about what it is that person, what this might be saying about that person, what they're longing for, what they're missing, what, and that's just the expression of it. So I really appreciate watching how you do that line of inquiry, Dennis.
Mm. Nice, yeah. Yeah, it's a protest, or it speaks to something that's really important to them.
Yeah,
like, that's being trampled on.
If someone's got a resentment going on, well, that's a very telling position to hold. Like, something is not going on okay with the way that you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And then you just disregard the resentment and explore the value.
Yes. Very insightful. Very insightful. Oh, that's great. That's going to help me be more sensitive and listening in those situations. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so listen, you know, pop culture has done some work. I'm going to just switch it back here to pop culture. Done some work in producing things that destigmatize mental health or personal relationships and challenges. I mean, every movie has to have conflict in it, correct? Have you got some, you know, two that I think of is Lars and the Real Girl and Silver Lining Playbook. Do you have any that have been a motif for you or you see as positive in the world for your line of work? I mean, sometimes Eugene and I talk about, oh, art movies with artists in them. So, you know, here's your chance. Do you have a favorite counseling movie?
Oh, funny.
It is interesting to think about.
Oh, I want to get...
You know, the old stereotype is Sigmund Freud, you know, blah, 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 the pipe and sitting there. We've definitely come a long way from there. We had Lenny Bruce, Three Faces of Eve, Girl Interrupted, and Frances being one of my favorites.
There's also that that TV show, In Therapy.
Treatment?
In Treatment, yes.
Yeah, that was a great show. Yeah. How was that show as a professional? Because maybe it sucked. Maybe it was horrible.
Well, you have to invite us back to that conversation.
Yeah.
Can you? Because I want more time to think about it. I need time to think. I don't want to throw something out there.
Thank you.
I love that question.
Good. Because I actually did think about messaging you about it, and I wasn't sure. I thought, well, no, they're going to be there. So let's reconvene then. Sit on that, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
If you'd be up for that, that'd be great, because
definitely.
I think it's a rich question. There's lots of room for conversation about that. I went more clinical. I started looking at the COVID-19 toolkit box. You know, I went the other way, Candy. Yeah.
Oh, that's totally cool. We have room for everybody here, for everybody. And it's all culture. All of this is part of culture, because this happens. This kind of level of event happens every 100 years. So...
Well, then if it's pop culture that you're interested in, what I found wonderful, just personally, not in my practice, but personally, what I really appreciated was the humor in the silly memes.
Oh, yeah.
And how you could watch someone's experience, like just by looking on their feeds, maybe you could see when they were in their like more angsty place, and then you could see when they sort of hit the wall and they were being silly, and then you could see when they were coming back at. But I really found the jokes the first week, and I appreciate humor in therapy as an aside. Like I find, I think Shakespeare talked about humor being tragedy plus time.
That makes sense. That sounds like Shakespeare.
Yeah,
and write that down.
And I think you can, like, Dennis and I run a weekly support group for folks, and the amount of laughter about pretty dark things, it's relieving, it's connecting, it puts it in perspective, and so I really appreciated that, and not the dumb ones, and just the really good ones.
Oh yeah, there were definitely some amazing memes. You're right, especially that first week or two that were just amazing. I love them too. I mean, there were times where I was really crying at, you know, just sitting crying, laughing so hard at some of them were so great.
Yeah.
So we'll reconvene. I think you've given us a lot to think about and share with our listeners. And I really am so thrilled to have such a different kind of topic. And what are the crossovers in culture and how does that affect us? And I'm really glad for your time.
Yeah, thanks for including us.
Oh, we really appreciate it. And it's great to meet you virtually.
Absolutely, Eugene.
Shall we share your websites on our Facebook page? Do you think that's a good idea? Or
are you free?
Yeah, feel free. Yeah.
That'd be great.
We'd love to.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're going to get back to you in a week or two. And
I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to think on that. I love that question.
It's such a great question. Yeah.
Good. Sorry to spring that on you.
That's our job, springing stuff on people.
Yeah. I do it to Eugene all the time. All right, Luca, thank you so much. And thank you for talking to us from Vancouver. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. Stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Stay safe. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
We're here with Claudia Guajardo, lead singer for Citizen in Chicago. Welcome to the agency, Claudia.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Welcome. Thanks. I'm so excited to hear you and ask you some questions. And how are you doing with the quarantine?
I'm actually doing great. I'm enjoying this. I've been very productive. I've been doing way more, you know, than I expected. And I'm keeping busy, especially with the face mask. So I'm having a good time.
Great. So, Claudia, I'm going to tell our listeners that we're going to talk a little bit about your music and then a little bit about your clothing design. One thing I was wondering was basically on the same line of how you're coping with quarantine, and I'm enjoying it too. I'm very guilty about it, that I actually really like it. I feel like I could live like this to some degree, add in some social life, and I'd be okay. Listen, how about the band though? Are you able to practice, and your band Citizen, do you want to tell us a little bit about it and how the band is coping?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we have to keep our distance. We're not allowed to practice or whatever, but you know, we're hanging in there. I know the guys are bummed because, you know, want to play. And shortly before this happened, you know, we were ready to go record. And so that's kind of at a halt right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a shame. So you're not practicing online with each other or anything?
No, I mean, we should, but those are things we got to figure out. I don't really know how to do all this digital stuff. I'm barely learning.
Okay.
So. Apparently there are some tools out there that work sort of well, sort of okay.
Yeah.
But you know, I play some music too I have a banjo player and I play with a guitar picker, and we haven't figured it out either. He lives like 20 blocks away, and we haven't managed to get together to play because we got to stay away from each other.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we'll be all right. Once this is over, we're just going to pick up where we left off.
Good. Good. I was going to ask, have you written any songs in quarantine?
You know what? Not yet, but okay. They are brewing in my head. Definitely going to start writing something soon, because this is like, there's just so much material.
Yeah. I also think, you know, your lyrics are extremely timely right now. May I read out one of the songs that we're going to play on this? We may have just played it, or we'll end up with this. It's called Piss Bomb, right?
Yeah, go for it.
Do you mind? Okay, because I thought the lyrics were they're so appropriate to how I feel and posting on Facebook in the time. Pissing people off just to get them off their ass. When there's no action, expect no reaction. Excuse me, sir, you're standing in my way. Oh no, I think I'm losing friends. Oh no, I'm lighting up a match. Oh no, there goes your whole damn world. He told me not to play with fire. When I played the Runaways on the jukebox, but when your heart's as cold as mine, you can't feel the burn. So I just wanted to put that out there. That I really related to.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome. I can't wait to share it with our listeners. What else? Eugene, you've got something, don't you?
I was curious, how did you get into music? Have you always been involved in singing?
No, I've always, you know, I've thought about being in a band, but it never really crossed my mind that I could do it, especially because, you know, I'm kind of hard-headed. I have a real bad time management and just have a hard time listening, jumping in, you know, with music and everything. And so, like, when I started, it was just something that I needed at the time. I needed another creative outlet. And, you know, when I met the first band that I was in, Side Action, it was all fun. And those guys were way ahead of me. They were more professional. They knew what they were doing. I would jump in and I warned them, like, hey, guys, I'm new to this. I really don't know much, but, you know, I'm willing to learn along the way. And so I guess they just got impatient with me after a year. And that band fell apart. So when Citizen started a few months after that, you know, I felt more comfortable because everyone that was on board with was like just kind of starting fresh again. So I felt, you know, a little more confident then. And then after that, we just kept going.
Very cool.
Have you guys recorded anything yet?
We have just recently written a bunch of new songs, and we've just been debating on what to put out. But as soon as we get back in, we definitely want to go back in the studio and record like a 4 or 5 song EP.
Good.
the songs are ready to go. It's just, you know, we just have to get the money just and do it.
That's always the issue, isn't it? get those resources together.
When you're writing or starting to think about how you're going to record, where's your inspiration? Is it other music? Is it nature? You know, the city?
Most of it comes from just living life, just experience. I have some temper issues, so I take a lot from my own experience of just dealing with day to day, you know, anything, and I'll just put that into music.
Perfect. I think a great genre for that too, right? Rock and roll, punk music. Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, most of the songs I've written, I mean, a lot of that comes from actual events or dreams or whatever, just, you know, bits and pieces of different experiences all chopped up and put into a song.
Cool. What's bothering you these days and what's making you happy?
Happy right now, it's doing this. Restarting, we'll get into it, with Neon Bomb. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been struggling with my clothing line for, I don't know, the past decade, because there's been a lot of trial and error. Mm-hmm. But I'm finally getting it down, learning how to manage my time, I guess. That's been my issue for so long. But I'm getting better at it, so, you know. I'm seeing results, so that's got to be good.
I love your clothes, and we're definitely sharing your Etsy page on our Facebook page, if that is any kind of help at all. And I hope it will be, and I hope that you get some feedback. Now, you've been sewing masks during quarantine.
Yeah.
How has that affected people seeing your designs?
It's actually pretty cool. I mean, just to be clear, when I started this, I only wanted to make one mask for myself. And then after that, I was just going to make a bunch of donation face masks. And, you know, being out of a job right now, having limited material, I figured, you know what, people are showing interest. They all want to buy one. I might as well just start, you know, selling a little bit and surviving off of that. So that's kind of how it started. But now people are starting to recognize the name. For a lot of people, like, you know, they see, oh, Neon Bomb Designs. Like, did it just like pop up overnight? Like, no, I've been doing this for so many years, but I guess I've always been doing it half-assed. And only now I'm barely getting the hang of how to take, you know, charge and be in better control of everything. Because, you know, I'm making my own patterns. I'm sewing everything. I'm doing, you know, everything all by myself. So mm-hmm. It's a lot of work for one person.
Mm-hmm. There's a really kind of focused demand right now too, because everybody wants masks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not a lot of people want them. They need them. But yeah, I mean, it's just because
it's true. They need them.
It's funny, you know, I watch a lot of fashion marketing competition shows. And one of the things that comes up for some people is that they're not willing to do something that a customer wants. It really becomes a block because they don't want to give up their soul. They see it as selling out or giving up their vision. And here is something that is purely customer driven, purely for the needs of the people, that they need it and they found you and you're able to provide it. And I think that says a lot about your character.
But, you know, the funny thing about that is that it took me, I mean, just this week alone, I realized that. Like, I remember sitting in my, you know, one of my fashion classes years ago, and my teacher was talking something about, you know, people are going, the customer's going to decide what they, you know, they're going to shape your product. They're going to demand, you know, you have to learn to adapt. And I was just like, wow, that's stupid. I'm going to make whatever I want.
I feel the same way as a painter or a writer myself. And yeah. I think you do need to stay very edgy and true and keep that vision. And then there's a fine line. I mean, listen, Stag busts his artwork and I send some paintings out with him. I didn't wake up one day and say, I want to paint 100 squirrels. You know, the customers liked one squirrel and I said, well, I'm not an idiot. I'm going to paint another squirrel painting.
It's true.
Mama wants her beer, you know?
Yeah.
Well, now I know squirrels are the thing, Candy. I didn't know.
No, that was 10 years ago. That was 10 years
okay. ago. I'm usually 10 years behind. You know that.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, when I started this, I had a really crappy design. And then, you know, I had a bunch of customers reach out to me and you know, give me some feedback. Hey, it would be nice if you did this or if you tried that. So I have been modifying them. And they're actually turning out way better.
Wow. That's really great to hear that kind of rapport. And that you might make a few bucks at it. I'm so proud of you.
Claudia, what's your Etsy address? Can you read it out for our listeners?
It's www.etsy.shop. Okay, I'm going to fuck it up. Sorry. It's Neon Bomb Designs. If you look up Neon Bomb Designs.
Yeah.
And sorry, guys.
We'll share it too. I'll share it on my Facebook page. We'll put it on the podcast page.
Whiskey's kicking in.
That's right. I love it. I'm so jealous. I'm drinking tea still. I'm still on my tea. I did a Zoom party the other night with a MASH theme and I drank way too much, so I'm still recovering. I love your clothes so much. I wish I hadn't eaten so much and I could fit into some of them. I'm eating my way through this quarantine, so it's difficult for my fashion purchases. But what else can we say? What about, do you worry about messages in your art? You have a lot of messages in your writing, in your music, and in your content of clothes. And I think that you're at the perfect place. It would be easy to say that how could punk rock be relevant how many years later? But it is more relevant now than it ever was in some ways.
It is. But, you know, all I know how to do right now is just take from my environment. And, you know, if I feel like writing today, I'll write a song. If I feel like making a mask, I'll make a mask. If I feel like painting, I'll paint. You know, so really it's just one of those, you can just kind of live in the moment and see what hits. It's just going with the flow.
That's perfect. I think that's also what people who say if anyone's feeling anxiety during this situation is to go with the flow, be able to free fall, be able to live that you don't know what it's going to be like next month.
Yeah. I mean, that's the scary part. So yeah, you got to like just be ready and be adaptable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. It's great talking to you. Is there anything you're thinking of, Eugene? Because I feel like I wrote down all these questions and I've burned through them.
Well, is there anything that you'd like to get out there that you'd like to talk to our listeners about, Claudia?
I'm going to be honest. I really don't know.
That's all right. More important to me that we got your voice out here. We heard about your clothes. And I'm really intrigued. I love it that you take it straight from your personal life. That's mind-blowing to me and wonderful. And that means a lot. And I hope some people will check out your designs and order some masks, please.
We'll give you a plug for your designs on the podcast and our Facebook page as well. And if you can let us know when there's some recordings available in the future that our listeners can reach out for, we'll give you a plug for that as well.
Oh yeah. There's definitely more coming out. I mean, once this is over, we're going to jump right into the studio, record our new songs. Neon Bomb is barely growing, so there's definitely going to be more coming out of that right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just I'm just working with what I have at the moment.
Love it. And excellent. So please, thanks
so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you
guys for having me.
Thank you, Claudia, and we'll talk to you soon. And thanks for listening to The Agency.
Awesome. Thank you.